for me, studying. So we've been studying the beginning of Genesis. So it happened to work out that this is lesson 12. This is actually supposed to be a wrap-up, but I lost some ground in Noah somewhere. And so this is the last class. So we've been studying Genesis 1 through 12. So lesson 12, we're on Genesis 12. And we've been studying Adam and Eve all the way up to the flood. And now we're here at Abraham. So we've covered about 2,000 years in one quarter. And then Scott will pick up and he will, you have 12 chapter, 13 chapters also. So you stay. Okay. Yep. So he'll pick up. I'm kicking off Abraham here. He did a little bit yesterday or last week, and then I'll set the stage a little bit for him, and he'll carry forward from there. Mason, would you open us up with prayer? Okay, let's really quickly here. So this was a timeline we went through before when we were really studying. So if you remember, Genesis chapter 5 has a genealogy in it. Genesis chapter 10 also does, and then a little bit of 11. But when we were studying 5, we pulled up this genealogy. And this is, like, I did the work to make sure that it... is close, so it's pretty close to what lines up, and you'll see here in a minute why that's important. But this was all the people in the lineage of Adam to Noah to Shem that were born before the flood. And so then we get after the flood, and this is Shem's lineage that we follow. And so Scott talked about last week, some of my questions sometimes tend to not be that clear, but the lifespan significantly shortens, and then also the time, how old they are when they start having children, changes. And so before, it was closer to 100 and 150 they might start having children. Post the flood, it's more like us, 25 to 30 age range, they start having children. And so you see a significant change post-flood in longevity of life and when they start having children. So I can't remember who has the end of Genesis. You have the end. So at the end, one thing we'll note is Pharaoh asks Jacob a question. He asks, "How old are you?" And I think it's probably because we have this long, his family has a long lifespan and a long history of living long time. So the reason why I think this is important is because in our world, because people live shorter times, we think things get lost quickly. Like, I knew my great-grandma, and she told me stories. But beyond that, like, I got nothing, right? Like, I got some pictures, some genealogy, but nothing, because things don't get passed down. And so we think, I think culturally, everything has to be written down. If it's not written down, nothing, right? And so when we get back in this time, we're like, wow, you know, Noah hasn't even written the book of Genesis yet, and all this has happened. And so what I think is helpful is to think about, and you can pick whoever you want. I just picked these men because it was easy and my sharing is covering. But if you pick three men, those three men can pass one message, could have passed one message all the way to Abraham. And so if you look at Adam overlaps with Lamech, Lamech overlaps with Noah, and Noah timeline-wise, overlaps with Abraham. And so, did they know each other? I don't know that. But that's how close the beginning would have been to Abraham. A few people could have passed that message forward. If you, and I put it in gray here, but if you include Shem, this is, I got a couple bonus items today, freebies today. If you include Shem in this, Shem could have held Joseph on his lap. They overlapped by about 50 years. So if you include a fourth man in here, you get all the way to Joseph with four men carrying that message. Like, that's tight. Shem could have been telling stories to all of these men all the way through. Or people could have gone to Shem and said, hey, what happened? Like, you were on the boat. What really happened? And so the degree of confidence that you could have that what happened when that Abraham was sharing, that Joseph was sharing, Jacob, Isaac, the degree of confidence would have been unbelievable because there's just a few generations that could have shared that message. Does that make sense? So because I graded out here, Shem lived 500 years post the flood. And so when lives shrink up, that's why we get this massive continuity just with Shem. Okay. I don't know why the colors are off today, but there's a tree there. It has shown up in days past, in weeks past. It's the same tree that I've been showing all quarter, but today it is not showing up. So I want to walk through, I want to spend some time on genealogy. And I know genealogy sometimes can be boring, but I think it's important for this whole story. Not only Genesis 12, but even beyond, and I'll share that here. So, and Scott went through a little bit of this last week. So Terah at the top had three sons. So Haran, Nahor, and Abram. In Genesis, it says Terah had these three at 70. When he was 70 years old, he had Haran, Nahor, and Abram. Well, that, like Scott said, that creates some complications, right? So some texts say, hey, there's some, because we know some facts. We know that Abram, we know that Terah had, it says that these were born when he was, or he had them at 70. It says that Abraham left certain places at certain ages, and Terah died at certain times and ages. So some people think there's a lot of options here. If you look at genealogy, so Haran had Lot and Milcah as his two that were mentioned here. But if we look at and say these three are not twin or triplets, and it's just he started having children, and Haran was the firstborn, and if we shift Nahor down and Abram down, and I'll explain why I think this, you get all the timelines then line up. And we'll go through this more. But do you remember who Nahor married? Milcah. And so you think about if Haran's the oldest and he's having children, that is something wrong. I double checked it. There was feedback. You heard it. Let me do this. Nuke that. I'll just do it on here.
Okay. It's locked up, so it's not working.
Give me a second here. No, Now they're going to be looking up my nose, but you'll be able to see, and you should be able to see and hear now. Okay, so if you think about all these generations happening, like maybe Haran had kids at the same time that Terah's having kids, right? And so we have Nahor marrying Milcah, and so if they're they don't have to be comparable in age, but perhaps they were comparable in age. Then we have Abram marrying Sarai, and if you remember, Sarai is Abram's. So we get a complication where he says he's a sister, but we learn later he actually is his sister. But it's the sister by another mother. Same father, another mother. So hence the dotted line here. And so the proximity of all these births, like I don't know what they were here. But so now, so this is the kind of the basis that we're working off of. But then Haran dies. And an interesting thing with Haran is if you go extra biblical, so not in the Bible, Jewish texts have stories about Haran and Abraham. And stories that say things like Terah's family, which we know were idol worshipers, and so they left that. But stories like Haran and Abraham wouldn't worship the idols. They at some point decided they weren't going to worship the idols. And the king, King Nimrod, said, "You have to. I'm going to kill you." And so it would have been Jewish, but Jewish literature says Haran died because he wouldn't worship idols, and Abraham was there to witness it. So the Quran also has that same story. So Quran was written much later after these little literature, the Jewish literature, but has a very similar story in that nature. I don't know, but it is interesting that Haran dies early, and the text seems to say before Terah, like Terah was there, witnessed it, was part of it, type of thing. So when Haran dies, the Lord says, "Leave Ur." And so we'll pull out a map here in a minute. So this whole family was in Ur. Haran dies, they leave Ur for Canaan. Okay? So the question is who is they? And I realize I'm going into some detail here, but it is relevant detail. So who leaves Ur for Canaan? So obviously Haran's dead, but Lot leaves, Terah leaves, and Abraham and Sarah leave. Nahor and Milcah stay behind. So file that away because that's important. So they leave Ur for Canaan, but they don't make it to Canaan yet. They stop in Haran. Not the sun, the city. So Terah dies, and then I think the Lord either repeats, says again, the leave this land, go to Canaan. So they left, they were in Ur, and I'll go into this in a little more detail on the map. They're in Ur, family grows, Haran dies, they leave Ur for Canaan, they stop in Haran, the father dies, and the Lord says, "Hey, you need to leave Haran and go to Canaan." And so they leave Haran. Any questions about that? Okay. I told you there were some freebies here. Bonus round. Again, important, relevant. So I scrunched it up. This is what we've already covered, right? So Terah's whole family. So Nahor has a son that we learn about. And Scott's going to talk. When we read later in Genesis, we're going to read about him. And there's a reason why we're going to read about him. Is because he had a daughter, and his daughter's name was Rebecca. Now, if we remember, I'm getting into Scott Stoop here a little bit, but I get Abraham's family here. Abraham had a son, and he doesn't want his son to marry someone from Canaan. He wants his son to marry someone from where? Remember? Back home. Where was home? Ur. We'll clarify that in a minute. And so Abraham sends his servant to go find, and some people, husband and wife, might say, you know, you go do this because you know what I like. But Abraham's servant says, hey, you know what Isaac likes, go find him a wife. And what happens? Abraham's son marries Rebecca. Now, you're thinking, well, Rebecca wasn't alone, right? Surely she had a brother. Well, she sure did. Laban was her brother. Now, an interesting thing, this transaction to occur, these two guys approved it. Laban approved it, and Bethuel, or however you say his name, approved that transaction. And so Abraham sent his servant back to his homeland where Nahor and Milcah stayed to find a wife for Isaac. Now Isaac took notes from his father Abraham, and he's like, hey, Jacob, I don't want you to marry someone from Canaan. You should go back to our homeland and find a wife. Why don't you, Jacob, go back to your grandpa, find your uncle, and get one of his kids? Who does Laban's kids? Rachel and Leah. Who marries Rachel and Leah? That's a complicated mess, but Jacob does. And so you see this whole family lineage that originated from this back and forth and this traveling and who stayed where. Imagine if Nahor and Milcah hadn't stayed back home. Like, now they need someone to marry, and the easy route is, like, go back to Mesopotamia in Ur and find family there to marry. Questions, comments on that? I thought that was helpful context for the whole story, because it ties everything together, all under this originating with the family of Terah, but I think originating from conversations and direction that God was giving to Abraham from the beginning. And we'll get to that in a minute. Okay. Let's read the text of Genesis here. Now Yahweh said to Abraham, leave your country and your relatives and your father's house and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. You will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who treats you with contempt. All the families of the earth will be blessed through you. So Abram went, as Yahweh had told him. Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Abram took Sarai and his wife, Lot his brother's son, all his possessions, and they gathered, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they went to go into the land of Canaan. They entered the land of Canaan. Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, the oak of Moreh. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Yahweh appeared to Abram and said, I will give you this land to your offspring. He built an altar there to Yahweh who appeared to him. He left from there to go to the mountain to the east of Bethel and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to Yahweh and called on Yahweh's name. Abram traveled, still going on toward the south. There was a famine in the land. Abram went down into Egypt to live as a foreigner there, for the famine was severe in the land. When he had come near to the center of Egypt, he said to his wife Sarai, see now, I know that you are a beautiful woman to look at. it will happen that when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. They will kill me. They will save you alive. Please say that you are my sister, that it may be well with me for your sake, and that my soul may live because of you. When Abram had come into Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. The princess of Pharaoh saw her and praised her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. He dealt well with Abram for her sake. He had sheep and cattle, male donkeys, male servants, female donkeys and camels. Yahweh afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this you've done to me? Why didn't you tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say, she is my sister, so that I took her to be my wife? Now therefore, see your wife, take her, and go your way. Pharaoh commanded the men concerning him, and they escorted him away with his wife and all that he had. So let's start with looking at the map. So one of the questions I had was, list some items that are note that happened in Ur and Haran, identify some key places on the map, and then draw Abram's journey. So let's start with the map. Where'd you put Ur? Where's Ur? So this is, if you back up to modern day, like Iraq, Iran, Turkey, like this is the Middle East region here. Where'd you put Ur? Yeah. So it's right up here. So a couple things to note. There's two rivers. It's a little hard to see on here, but Euphrates and Tigris. This region in between the rivers is called Mesopotamia, which if the whole smarter than your fifth grader, are you smarter than a fifth grader? Like Mesopotamia, I don't know why I learned a ton about Mesopotamia, but I had no idea where it was. But Mesopotamia means between two rivers. And so when we talk about Mesopotamia, we're really talking about this region here, but Ur is part of it. So what do we say happens in Ur? Who dies? Yeah. Haran dies in Ur. And we have some interesting context from Stephen in Acts. So in Acts, Stephen says when he's giving his dissertation on the history of the Israelites, the God of glory appeared to Father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he lived in Haran. And he said to him, get out of your land and away from your relatives and come into the land which I will show you. Then he came out of the land of the Chaldeans and lived in Haran. And so before, up here is Haran. Before he goes there, God called him out. And called him out of the land of the Chaldeans, and so Babylon is right here, and so that's really the land of the Chaldeans is surrounding right in there. And so when you read Genesis 12, it sounds like the promises that we're going to get to occurred when he was in Haran, but Stephen understood it to either occur at both locations, or it's a repeat of what happened here in Ur. So then where's Canaan from here? Yeah. So it's over here on the left. I put this big blob here. I don't know. Over here. And so God says, leave here and go there. And so what do? They go there. Was there confusion about what God told them to do? Like, why did they go there? And if you remember, Abram goes, Abram's wife, Sarai goes, Abram's father, Terah goes, Abram's nephew, Lot. If you frame it all around Abram, God gave a direction to Abram here, he takes those people with him to Haran, but they're supposed to be going to Canaan. Why in the world would they go that direction? That's where landscape is important. No one went that direction, or everyone went the direction they did to go there, because there's straight up desert in the middle, and this is the road. Like it, we have roads that we travel on. They're much tighter, but you might think, why do you turn? Why did they go north a little bit when they're really trying to go east? Well, the road went that way. That's what they did here. They followed the path that everyone took to get to Canaan. They're going to Canaan. They're just going their route to Canaan. You wouldn't go through the desert. No one would consider going through the desert, even though that was the most direct route. Maybe a better example is sometimes I've had to fly to Atlanta to fly to Phoenix, right? Like, that's just the route that our world takes. God could say, go to Phoenix. I stop in Atlanta first, but I'm on my way to Phoenix, just the way the plane went at the time. Questions about that? So what happens in... I realize I'm probably saying it different every single time I say it. Haran. What happens there? Who dies? Yeah, the father dies here. And so this is where we get some bits. So Stephen says in Acts, from there, when his father, Abram's father, was dead, God moved him into this land which you are now living, which is here, moved him there. So when Terah dies, Abram leaves. So Abram went, as Yahweh had told him. Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. So they leave there, and they head to Canaan. So they make it to Canaan. They stop in Shechem. And then it starts getting really small here, so my map starts falling apart. But then they stop, and he pitches a tent. There's some altars that are built, but he pitches a tent between Bethel and Ai. So then what prompts them to leave there? So they made it. They accomplished what God asked. What prompts them to leave? Yeah, famine. And where do they go? Egypt. And so, I didn't make a note of this, but for some reason, I had that they stopped there first in some texts, but then they make it to Egypt because of the famine. And so then the end of Genesis 12 is the situation that... Abram gets into with Sarai being beautiful with Pharaoh. They've made this track. They followed what God asked them to do. A famine occurs, and now they're heading to a land, another land that they don't know, to ward off the famine. Any comments, questions about this? So, if Abraham wasn't the firstborn, and the three brothers were born at different times, and Abraham was a later born, you can have Terah dying when he was 205, and Abraham leaving when he's 75. And so that's a way that the text would line up in the storyline. Scott.
So Emily helped me clean up that mess a little bit that I made last week as far as the possibilities for that issue that we saw. And I was making more commentary that helped bring some clarity to it. So I'll just say that we are used to saying our kids' names in Hebrew. It's natural. As a matter of fact, it became a joke with Brett because we were always hand Brett for our youngest. So, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. Or relevance in the story. So Abram's listed first, even though he's probably the youngest. And he gave one example where Ham, I believe. Whichever one was the youngest was not listed in that order.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think there's legitimacy with understanding the word.
So all of this genealogy is relevant because God's building this story. He's got this thread that he starts with Adam, and it follows all the way through, and he's building up to Abraham, really, here, from a book of Genesis. So everything we've read about is preparing and following this story to get to Abraham, which ultimately then gets us to, well, we'll see in a minute. We'll talk about the promises here. But that's the genealogy story is preparing us for right here, Genesis 12. Other comments? Okay. So, another question I had, what promises did God give to Abram? I've been trying to say Abram and not Abraham, but I'm sure I'm failing. You're probably noticing enough. But what promises were given? Kurt? Yeah, so you're spot on. When I feel like, I like to oversimplify things, but if you think about it in these three buckets that Kurt just said, like he says, I'm going to give you land, I'm going to make you a great nation. We used to do this with our kids, land, great nation, all people blessed. And so I feel like I'm making the motions, but so the land is going to be given, make a great nation, and then all people blessed. Are the promises that are given. And so these really are foundational for God's people for the rest of Scripture. And so these are referenced back to throughout the Old Testament and into the New Testament. So these are critical promises made by God to his people. I know we're spending more time on these, but any comments on the promises? Scott?
It struck me this time the three layers of the blessings. Because one is Abram is blessed. The next is he is going to be a blessing. And then the third is that everyone will be blessed through him, not because of him, but because of Christ. But I just see three different layers. It's one thing for God to bless you, but you take the next step to be a blessing to others.
Yeah. Yep, that's I think it was Eric Borlaug that had a portion of his lesson was, I know it was Eric, but it may have been when I was in Atlanta one time, but it was about being a blessing to others. Was it here? And I thought I still have a bunch of notes on that and think about it often. So appreciate that comment. Other comments about the promises? Mason? That's a great call out. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Other comments? So I realize in the text, or in the questions, this may have been confusing, but who else was given the same promises? So we're going to get to this, but I think it's relevant that this thread plays through. That this isn't the only time these promises are given. Who else? Mike? Yeah. So with Isaac, the coloring is rough. So in Genesis 26, this is God saying this to Isaac. Live in the land I will tell you about. Live in this land, and I will be with you and will bless you. For I will give to you and to your offspring all these lands, and I will establish the oath which I swore to Abraham, your father. I will multiply your offspring, so the great nation piece of it, as the stars of the sky, and I will give all the lands to your offspring. In your offspring, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. And Mike said Jacob, and so in Genesis 28 it says, I will give the land you lie on to your offsprings. Your offsprings will be as the dust of the earth, so again, great nation, and will spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. In you and in your offspring, all the families of the earth will be blessed. And so you see this cascade from Abraham to his son Isaac, to Isaac's son Jacob, of passing this same promise down, and where that lineage is to follow. Question was about them. Comments? Okay. So let's look ahead. So here are the promises that were given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. What's the fulfillment? What's the fulfillment of the land? When is the land promise fulfilled? Yeah. So they go there, and they Abraham is there at times, Isaac is there, Jacob's there at times. It was really the conquest of Canaan. So after Moses, Joshua comes in, conquests Canaan. There's some conversation around that David fleshed that out more and Solomon fleshed that out more, but I used the conquest of Canaan. So in the book of Joshua, they really take and Canaan land is theirs. Comments on that? Okay. What about great nation? When's that fulfilled?
Well, they're in Egypt, and Jacob's family goes to Egypt, and just off the top of my head, there's 70, 75 of them or something like that.
Yeah, some.
Egypt during the famine, Joseph was there as a ruler, and they just blossomed into many, many people while they were there.
Yep, and it's counterintuitive that that's where that explosion would occur under when they were slaves, right? That explosion occurred in as they were servants. And so, like, God makes them a nation. So anytime I think about the nation of Israel, Jeff Nettles had a lesson here, and his whole lesson was about how God made his people a nation. By, like, if you think about how do you make a nation, you put them through something hard to sit together, you give them a land, and you give them laws. Bam, you got a nation. And that's exactly what happened to Israel. And so Jacob, Kurt brought up Jacob, was renamed to Israel. So all the people, descendants of Jacob, were the Israelites. And so they go through the hardship in Egypt. God brings them out through more hardship. They encounter things together as they wander in the wilderness. They're given land, the Canaan land that Joshua took over, and God gives them laws through Moses. And so when the whole Old Testament is all about the great nation that came from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Comments? Questions? Scott?
So the other aspect of spiritual connection is thinking of our study of John, who are the sons of Abraham. So the spiritual side of it is the church.
Yep.
The great nation becomes the church
That's a great point. Thank you for bringing that up. Other comments? Mason? Whoops.
Just that, I think there's helpful things in dividing up land, nation, people, but also in remembering that also to have the nation, the other two parts. And so I also like simplifying it. It's just really kind of just one at the same time. There's one direction this is going. And it's
yeah, that's good. Yeah, you see time and time again, those that are blessing that family are blessed, and those that do not, that they are cursed. Yeah. Yeah. Great points. Other comments? So then all people blessed. And so those were, it was said in all nations blessed, all families blessed. What is the fulfillment of that? This is the softball. Travis.
Jesus. Think about Pentecost, all the called upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. I guess if you go to Cornelius, think about the Gentiles are brought into. That kind of reminded me of Jesus saying that I have sheep that are not of this fold that I'm going to call to as well. That ultimately, through Jesus, this is transpired.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of texts you could go to, but Peter says in Acts 3, "You are the children of the prophets and of the covenant which God made with our fathers, saying to Abraham, all the families of the earth will be blessed through your offspring. God, having raised up his servant Jesus, sent him to you first to bless you." And so Peter makes this connection of, remember Abraham? Remember the promise that was made? There's Jesus? That's the fulfillment of the third promise there, that all people would be blessed, all nations, all families would be blessed through this servant Jesus. More come. Mason?
Someone hinted at this, I guess, already with the spiritual Israel, but they're all also built in Jesus. I think of Hebrews 4, picks out, I can't remember, Psalm 95, but it picks out the language of the psalm that talks about, hey, you won't enter my rest, kind of set in the wilderness period. And he says, so then after they're already in the land, David, well, anyway.
Mason, Scott, and Kurt are really bringing up, that these are kind of the beginning. Like, this is the start. And these continue on. And we sing a song about Canaan land in a spiritual sense. We're all spiritually part of the family of Abraham and Jesus being how we're blessed also. So I think that's good. Good comments. One thing that I think, so if we think about the lineage of this is Adam, and if we go down to Abram, that we do see, and I didn't check ahead of time, I have a different color. Here, I'll do shapes. So Abraham to Isaac to Jacob, we see those are the promises that are fulfilled or given to them. And then we see this as the branch of the people that are coming from here. This is the Israelites, right? But there are, so Abram had Sarai. I'm assuming she dies and he remarries. We will see other nations forming off of these people that don't end up being part of Israel, but we're still part of the great nation promise. But then we see the story of Scripture following this, but there's a whole host of other people out there in the world. And so we see, like, Jonah being told to go to people that are not Israelites. So we've got Ishmael out here, Isaac has additional children, Esau out here, that would have still carried this patriarchal law forward, that weren't Israelites. Other comments? Mike? Okay, that's a great call. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for the time. Scott's next.